Welcome to WebRush, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to WebRush. This is episode 139. And today, Craig and I, my indomitable co-host, we're going to talk about what it's like to build open source products for big companies. And specifically, we're talking about the Azure Static Web Apps CLI, which just went live, I believe, recently.
Yeah.
And we have its creator on here, a good friend of ours, Craig, right?
Absolutely. Wasim is awesome. He's like my favorite Wasim in the entire world. Like, seriously.
Really? Do you know many Wasims?
That's beside the point. I'm saying, like, out of all the Wasims, he is my favorite.
So with that, let's welcome Wasim Chekhem to the show. How are you doing, Wasim?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for inviting me.
And Wasim, how many Wasims do you know?
Seriously, I know like maybe three or four of them. Yeah.
Impressive. Are you the best of the Wasims?
I am the cutest one.
I can tell we're going to be off to a good start already here today.
That's awesome.
And do you know why? Because Wasim, it means cute in Arabic.
Ah, I had no idea. Well, that's a lot better than Craig, because the etymology of Craig is crag, which is a crack in the rock. So I have this like real majestic, like, you know, background in my name. So I would much rather be called Wasim.
All right, and for those of you out there who are not familiar with Wasim, let's get to know him a little. Wasim is a passionate supporter of open source. He currently works for Microsoft as a senior developer advocate, specializing in JavaScript and web technologies. He's a core contributor of Angular and Node.js. And Wasim is also the author of many tools for developers, such as xlayers.dev and ngx.tools. For his many contributions to the developer community, Auth0 nominated Wasim as an Auth ambassador, and Google nominated him as a GDE on web technologies, for like Angular and Google Assistant, as well as Google Cloud Platform. In his free time, Wasim is learning electronic music production, as well as sketchnoting. You can reach out to Wasim anytime on Twitter, and we can drop that link into the show notes, and or also at wasim.dev on his website. So welcome to the show, Wasim.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That was a great introduction.
Yeah, we're really glad to have you here, because we've been trying to schedule this for a while. There's something you've been working on for a long time, we're going to talk about today, and it's finally out in public to kind of get out there. I say finally.
Yeah. I mean, it's been open source from the start, but now, I mean, it's publicly announced.
Right. It's been out there, but there hasn't really been talked about until recently. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about what is Azure Static Web Apps CLI and, you know, and its relationship with the Azure Static Web Apps?
Yeah, sure. So for those who know about the new service that Microsoft just launched recently, the Azure Static Web Apps, so the CLI is its little companion. It allows you to basically try out your app locally in your local environment before deploying it to Azure. So basically, it gives you a seamless, you know, experience trying out your static front end with your optional Azure API, and gives a little a few features like Auth emulation and route configuration and all this little stuff.
So when you say Auth emulation, what does that mean? People try to envision it in their mind's eye.
Sure, yeah, definitely. So with the Azure Static Web Apps, when you deploy your app on production, you have authentication built into the SWA service. Like, you know, John and I like to call it SWA. It's easier. So we have this built-in auth feature. However, locally, we've decided to just emulate that behavior because, you know, re-implementing auth is very, very challenging. So we just give you a nice UI where you can fill in the required information with your mocked data and, you know, just make sure that the auth experience works locally with your mock data. And when deployed on production, you will have the Glyxim experience, but using the actual data from, you know, users logged in and users data and stuff like that.
So I'll use a term from Ward. Let's take a step back for a minute. And let's talk about the static web apps CLI static web apps and what happens in production in the cloud. So when you deploy an app, a React app, whatever, up to the cloud, you have, as you mentioned, authentication, authorization, all this stuff just works. What would happen if I ran that same app locally in my machine without the static web apps CLI?
So for your SWA app to work properly on production on Azure, there are many services actually that come into play. So we have this kind of like storage instance where we host your static files. And we also spin up a Azure Functions instance if you have deployed an API, which is optional. On top of that, we also have things like, as I mentioned, authentication, which using like easy auth and these kind of services provided by Azure, and other stuff like custom domains and app settings, like you can set app environment variables, things like that. So, you know, there are a lot of services provided by Azure, which we don't necessarily have locally available to you as emulators or CLIs. So what the Azure Static Web App CLI tries to do is to mimic or emulate some of these services, you know, just the necessary ones for you to be able to try out your app. And by app, I mean front end plus API with auth and all the stuff locally, just to make sure that the whole experience, I mean, you're able to debug your app both front end and back end locally before deploying to Azure, and you know, wait a couple of minutes before having the final result.
I appreciate that. So if I had a React application, and for now let's just say there's no functions, there's no API, it's just a React app, and I want to deploy it to static web apps, and I implemented, let's say, auth, because that's what we started talking about first. If I deploy it to the cloud, I understand it'll work as Azure sets all this up. If I ran it locally, why can't I just run my React app locally on my machine and use EasyAuth? Because isn't EasyAuth just an API we call? Like, why do I need an emulator to do that?
So for a couple of reasons. So if you're using a React or Vue or Angular or whatever static JavaScript framework, definitely, yeah, you could try your app with the static server locally or even with the dev server. However, again, features like the built-in auth that is provided by Azure Static Web Apps won't be available to you, because that's something that Azure provides you with. If you have a routes configuration file with all the ACL, with all the fallback routes, all those things that you could do to customize your SWA app won't be available to you if you're using the dev server or any static server. So you need a tool that provides you with these features, auth, routes configurations, and other upcoming features. that's one of the benefits of using this CLI, comparing to just like a static server. So that's what the Static Web App CLI provides you with. It's kind of like a seamless integration with Static Web App's features. Comparing if like using the server, the dev server that is provided by your framework, like Angular or React or Vue, which only allows you to spin up, you know, a simple static server to try your static app. I'm sorry, I'm saying too many static words here.
it happens.
So yeah, I mean, so that works if you're just focusing on the front end app with no auth, no back end, nothing at all. But if you're adding auth, authorizations, authentication, and providing a configuration file, you probably won't need this CLI in order to check that everything works perfectly locally before deploying it again to the cloud.
Hey, are you building apps in React, Angular, Node, or some other framework? Well, with NX, you can build your full stack apps in a shared monorepo, integrate with modern tools, and reinforce best practices. You'll get advanced code generation and automatically configured tooling like Cypress, Jest, and Prettier that will simplify your workflow. NX also helps you simplify the relationships between applications and shared libraries to make it easier to share more code and develop more consistently across teams. And the best part is you'll build higher quality apps and spend less time on configuration. So visit nx.dev to get Narwhal's popular open source toolkit for monorepo development today.
So would you say it's fair that the CLI basically brings Azure to you? It brings those features to your local environment?
The Azure CLI, I mean, because we have Azure CLI. So the Azure Static Web App CLI, which is a different CLI, brings to you just the needed pieces for SWA. So you can try, debug, and launch your app locally. And by the way, the Azure Static Web App CLI also support connecting to your existing dev servers. So let's say if you're using Angular as a JavaScript framework. So Angular comes with the Angular CLI, which allows you to, start a dev server so you can work on your Angular project. So you can do that. You can start your Angular server somewhere. You can also start your Azure Functions dev server on a different terminal, and then you can start the Azure Static Web CLI and tell it to connect to both these servers. So you could keep working on your different front-end, back-end stories and have the Azure Static Web CLI sit in the middle and gives you this auth feature emulation and also the configuration file support. So yeah, this is one of the features that the CLI support as well.
Let's talk a little bit about the word that we keep repeating, static. I think I have a personal pet peeve, I guess is the term for it. Problem is a better word for it, with the word static. Although I don't have a great solution for it. Like, I think of these things as web apps. They're, whether you're using React or Angular or Vue, or if I'm just using 11T, or I just have an HTML page with some JavaScript and CSS in it, and none of these frameworks. We call these things Azure Static Web Apps. That's the name of the product, the tool. What about it? Like, what does static mean in this context? I mean, is it important? I mean, can I have JavaScript and other code that changes, or what is it about the word static that kind of means something here?
Yeah, sure. So static in this particular context means, I think it refers to the static files actually that you deploy on the server and then get sent over to your client or browser to be interpreted and executed, like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. These are static files, and also any other assets. The main idea here is like static versus dynamic, like server dynamic generated content. Let's say, for instance, like you have a .NET MVC app or like a PHP MVC app that, when you request, you send a request to the server, and then the server generate all the HTML and the data and then sends you back the response. So this is like what I call dynamic. So static, it's the opposite of this. So you will send you all the JavaScript content to the browser, be it, fully and static, quote, static files like pure HTML and CSS, no JavaScript, or with JavaScript with any other popular framework. So yeah, static here is, I understand, like, could be maybe a weird definition, but it's based on the, the modern hype development era where
I guess you got to name it something, right? Like, it's got to be called something. And
well, we do a really good job
of web apps too,
of overloading our terms in this industry. Like, we just pick one word and it means a lot of different things in different contexts.
Yeah. And I mean, it's coming from the, probably that's something that's common in the front end community, like static versus dynamic. Well, like static, it's anything that gets sent to the browser and get, JavaScript, HTML, CSS. Whereas like dynamic is like, running an Express Node.js server in an MVC style, not the REST API, but as an MVC, where the views got generated dynamically on the server, comparing to that, you know, to the views that get generated on the client, which is technically dynamic.
So, yeah, and I've always thought about like static. I agree. It's, to me, it's just the files, right? And I've always thought about static as, what is it not doing? One of the things it's not doing is, you're not running NPM run build every single time somebody hits your site, yeah, either. You're not cranking up, as you said, an Express server or a PHP server or whatever you use as your back end or ASP.NET. But getting back to the CLI that you built, we want to talk to you today about why you built this and kind of what that process was like, because there's a lot of folks out there who build with open source. And this isn't your first open source project by far. We'll put some links into the show notes or some others that you've written. But you work for Microsoft, and the company that you work for, setting the stage, they built this Azure Static Web Apps product. And it was in preview, which, to those out there who don't know what that means, it means it's not fully released, not fully supported yet. Preview is like a alpha, beta, pre-release, I guess is the best words. And then now it's released. It's in what Microsoft calls GA for general availability, and everybody can go get it. So what, during the preview, the pre-release, you saw that there was this problem of, you can run it in the cloud, but let's say you're building locally. It's kind of nice to know if it works before you actually push it to the cloud. You're like, we can't do that yet. So you built something that helps check the authentication and connect the, if you have functions, serverless to your static assets through a reverse proxy locally on your machine, to serve it, basically to emulate what's happening in the cloud. So you had this great idea and you wanted to move forward with it, with open source. What was it like when you had this idea and then you said, you know what, this is, it's time for me to go approach the people who own this product to make this a real thing? Like, that could be a scary step. You're now showing your children to, you're showing your child to somebody else and wondering, are they going to like it? Are they going to tell me to go away? Are they going to love it? I mean, what was that like? What was your thought process?
Yeah, so the story is slightly different, but yeah, but yeah, kind of similar.
Yeah, correct.
Let me tell you. So it all started in 2019. When actually I came back from paternity leave on February. And yeah, when I came back, you know, I was disconnected for 3 months from tech and from work. So when I came in, I was looking on, okay, what am I going to work on right now? You know, because I was working on a couple of different projects before leaving on paternity. And when I came back, you know, I had to start fresh. So I was lucky enough actually to be part of the first team of developer advocates. And I think, John, you were also part of that team, who were giving feedback to the Azure Static Web App team before even the project got released, you know, got its first preview. So yeah, we're helping the team, providing feedback, trying all, helping them test new features and all the stuff. And when the auth story came in, so I was really fascinated by the authentication user experience, you know, and okay, that's built in. It's very simple. You just need to point to a link to a URL and that's it. That was really great to have as a feature. But when you had to try that feature locally before, as John mentioned, before deploying to production and, you know, waiting 3 to 4 minutes for your GitHub action to build and deploy, you know, it's a waste of time for me as a developer. So what I did back then was to, I tried to understand how auth worked, you know, the authentication experience provided by Azure Static Web Apps worked, like internally, but since I hadn't had access to the source code, I did everything by, you know, reverse engineering all the requests, basically deploying an app that uses auth and then opening my DevTools and setting breakpoints in the HTTP request and following all the requests, what are the cookies and what are their values. So I did all that process, took like a week or so. So I was able to, you know, identify all the redirections, all the links, and it, I think there were like 12 involved.
So, but before you keep going there, I think that process is fascinating. So what was that like, tracing through all that and reverse engineering that part of the system? And did you encounter anything that really surprised you?
I mean, no, that's, you know, best. This is like a simple SS single sign-on process, like workflow. Or I should call it like it's an implicit workflow. I had some experience with that process based on some work I've done 2 years ago for Auth0. So as we're familiar with that. And even though like took me like a week or so to, trace all the requests and all the values and all the actors in that scenario, you know. And I tried to replicate that locally. So I built a Node.js server that replicates all these requests, these headers and these requests and these cookies, just for me to be able to try auth locally. So it worked, actually. So I was able to simulate, you know, the authentication locally. However, I was wondering, okay, so I have this authentication server. That was the initial name, actually, for the CLI, authentication server. I was wondering what's needed actually to have the full experience, because there is API. So API, there is already a CLI for the Azure functions, which is core tools. So I don't have to build that one. And what's left is a simple static server that serves my static files, you know, JavaScript, HTML stuff. So I actually hooked up a couple of, you know, bricks together, and I had the final prototype ready. So I had authentication, I had the proxy server that's, you know, proxies request to the API, and I had the static server ready. Of course, there were no configuration, there were no things like right now, because like I had like very, very, very simple prototype, but it was doing the job. So I could run my app locally. I had all the API requests proxified to the Azure functions. I had all the auth requests proxified to the auth server, and all the rest was served as a static content. So that was my initial goal, actually, just to build something for myself to speed up my, you know, dev process. And because we were trying like different scenarios for the product team, different frameworks, different use cases, edge cases. So I had to, you know, go fast and be able to provide my feedback really quick. So that's why I built that tool for myself. And like any other tool I build, it's open. It's open source on GitHub, publicly, no private. So I was lucky enough to have a couple of colleagues to try that. It wasn't CLI, it was like a Node.js project locally. So Aaron Powell, Jen Looper, I think John as well, give it like a real quick try. And even actually Aaron was, you know, back then when the team knew about this tool and they eventually wanted to adopt it. I had Aaron Powell, who actually added the first support for .NET. So all the .NET support was done thanks to Aaron. So thank you, Aaron.
That's awesome.
So yeah, that's this whole story started as just me trying to figure out how authentication worked in static web apps, and then ended up having a fully working prototype, very like, you know, really simple, like a very simple Node.js application with three servers, a proxy in between, and, you know, all the orchestration is done by that proxy.
How did you handle the proxying? What sort of, was that a NPM package that you were able to install and handled it for you? Did you write it all by hand?
Yep. So the first, let me get into, you know, more details. So the authentication server that I implemented initially was done as an Azure function project. So I had an Azure function with 12 functions, that one function per route, you know, and, you know, remember that each route is dealing with one piece of the authentication, you know, redirects, login, logout, purging, all stuff. And the static server part was done using initially the some NPM package. I can't remember because we changed that recently. You know, something like live server or static server or HTTP server. I can't remember.
I can never decide which one of those to pick, by the way. There's so many libraries out there to start a web dev server these days.
Yeah.
Sorry, just continue.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. That's why, like, I've tried a couple of them, even yours, John Papa.
Oh, yeah. Light server. Yep.
Light server. Yeah. So my criteria were, I wanted like a lightweight, you know, NPM package with less dependencies. In the initial requirement for me was to have a static server that provides fallback routes, because I didn't want to implement that myself. But eventually I ended up doing it. So
do you want to explain real quick, just folks, what a fallback route is?
So fallback route is, you know, when you're deploying your JavaScript web, whatever technology app using any, web framework like React, Angular, Vue, or any single page application technology. So basically that JavaScript that you run on the browser and the framework, they handle the routing for you directly on your browser. So when you navigate through your app, all the routing system is done by your browser using JavaScript. However, with like the default configuration, if you navigate to your about page in your Angular app and you hit refresh, so the browser is really dumb. It's going to take that URL and going to send it to the server asking for, okay, hey, server, give me that about page. However, the server doesn't know about your route because that's a JavaScript, that's a front end piece. So in order to avoid that, and yeah, we'll end up having a 404 page. So in order to avoid that, you need to do some server-side configuration, either in your Nginx or Apache or whatever server you're using, to do some magic redirection. So basically it redirects all the routes to the index.html or whatever the default page you have. So all the routes got handled by the JavaScript framework. I don't know if that's answered your question, but that's something that we have on static web apps. And I wanted to have of course, the CLI needed to support that as well. So that's why I was looking for a Node.js package that support that. And yeah, hopefully most of them support that, because that's something common, really common in front-end development nowadays.
Yeah, it looks like you landed on the serve static. I got the words wrong already. Static serves or serve static.
That's the last, that's the last package. Yeah, serve static. Because I think it was one of the few that had like less different dependencies.
Yeah, there's a lot of them out there. And it's interesting because you're right. You want something that's simple to just basically, it's your dev server, right? It's the core of the dev server just to run, to serve the content. But you don't want anything heavy or unreliable and something you can tap into, I imagine, so you could customize it.
If we had like more time, I would definitely do it myself, because what's we need for the Azure SQL Web CLI is very, very simple. Like we don't need any, authentication support provided by the server itself or caching, whatever, because everything is handled by other, other pieces in the CLI. I only needed like just Getter URL, fetch a file, and then serve it. With some control, obviously.
But if you still wanted to use the framework dev server, you could do that too, right?
Yeah, and that's where the proxy comes in. So the proxy tool I'm using is HTTP proxy, I think. That's the most popular NPM package. And that's the core piece on the server for the CLI, which basically proxies either to the Azure Functions dev server or your front-end dev server. And I mean, yeah, their API, the public API is very simple. That's why I choose that one. So that's about the implementation. So once the team agreed to, let me go back to my story. So once the team find out about that this particular tool, I got a message from Anthony Xu, who's a PM on the project, telling me, "Hey, we like your tool. Can we use it?" I say, "Oh, yeah, definitely." And there were like where the official, I say, adoption was made by the team, and I became officially the maintainer of that tool up until today. So since that day, since the team decided to adopt it, this little prototype now became, like an official tool. So it had to be like some pieces had to be re-implemented and write more unit tests, and make it,
you're saying that when you wrote a tool for yourself, it wasn't fully hardened and solidified and resilient world to use?
It was by myself. Yeah.
Works on my
totally
machine.
Feel you.
Yeah. I was mainly the only one using it. So, but then, things got more like, interesting because, this was, now officially supported tool, and it had to meet some standards met by Microsoft and Microsoft engineering. So the first thing was to move that project on Microsoft org on GitHub. So at Microsoft, we have a process for that. So, you need some approvals and all stuff. I'm not going to go into details. But after that, we had like something security scan checks done by GitHub. And then, you need to have the right license, documentation, some basic stuff for it to be like a serious open source project. And to be honest, this is something that any serious open source project should be doing, not only those on Microsoft. I applied this as well to my personal projects, like good documentation and, engaging with the contributors and people who are using the tool.
Let's pause there for just a minute, yeah. Wasim, because I think what you're saying is really important. And you're right. Other serious companies out there with open source do this stuff too. I know you and I both contributed to the Angular team's product over the years, and they have their own process. Processes may be different, but the things that they all look for are the same. They're looking to have secure, safe, reliable, well-tested, well-documented. And whatever their process is, sometimes it's difficult to go through as a contributor, but there's a reason for it all. Consistency, I think, is a big piece too, right? To make sure when you've got thousands, if not millions of people looking at your repos up on GitHub, to make sure that all that stuff goes through something that they can trust and support. Because correct me if I'm wrong, now that it's part of Microsoft's open source, just like when you contributed to Angular and to Node, you've also done that too. Those Node, Angular, now Microsoft, for the code that you've contributed, they now are responsible for what that code does, right?
I mean,
still here, but they're taking on that ownership of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a good point because, when it comes to, as far as the the Azure Static Web Apps CLI is concerned, eventually this is going to be maintained by the engineering team. So I might happen to be the creator or whatever. I mean, the person who initiated the project. In the future, there's a team who's going to be in charge of this. So they need to have like a solid foundation for the project so they can build on top of it and, have a well-written unit test, end-to-end test documentation, even API comments, comments in your code and stuff like very little details like those ones. Now, so, okay, yeah, there's like a simple logic in your code. So why did you use this? And this is like even more important for the, we haven't talked about this yet, but the implementation for the, I call it the route engine for the CLI, because that's the implementation that's responsible of parsing your configuration file that you use with Azure Static Web Apps. You know, basically that where you secure your routes, or you add some default MIME types, or things like custom error pages. You know, you have this possibility with Azure Static Web Apps. So the CLI is also supposed to support that file, and the amount of code and logic responsible of this piece of parsing this file is very complicated, I would say, and having some code and some clear comment about the intention, about your whys, is very important for the future team, and even my future self, if I have to fix any bug in 6 months or so.
Right.
Yeah, I need to understand why did I write this piece of logic. So yeah, good foundation is very important in any open source project. The main idea here is now that the CLI is an official product and officially supported by the Azure Static Web App team. I'm currently the main maintainer of the tool and working on some core features for now. We have a roadmap for now for like 2 or 3 more features to add in the future. very cool stuff to come. And that's been a pretty amazing experience so far. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm obviously still working on it. So
yeah, let's dig into the configuration aspect of it a little bit, because I guess you kind of have a similar sort of issue like you had with the auth, where like Azure does something and then the CLI needs to do something and it has to kind of match. What is that process like for you?
So because the CLI started off as a first of all, as a personal project, and I didn't have access actually to the code of, I didn't request access to the code for Azure Static Web Apps, to be honest. I had to imagine how that workflow worked under the hood. So I based that implementation on my own understanding, on my personal understanding of how things were working. Things like, as you mentioned, the auth. So that was part of my reverse engineering process. And also lately about the configuration file and all the routes and different section were handled by Azure. And then I had to implement this behavior in the CLI.
So basically, if nothing else works out for you, you can always be hired as a very talented reverse engineer.
Since I was a child, I really love to understand how things work internally.
Well, this is the fun part of all the development jobs, right? It's that you see a problem, you're working on something, you see a problem, and a lot of times we're like, oh, there's nothing out there that does this. I'll just write something myself and make it work. And this is kind of a story I think a lot of folks out there can relate to, where you create something that's cool for you, but then one day somebody saw this and said, oh boy, we could really use this too. Can we have it? And it kind of grew from there. So that's impressive.
So definitely. I mean, yeah. And for the CLI, I think the secret for that, for this story, is that, I mean, the CLI came in the right moment for the team, because I mean, literally the team was still working on the service on Static Web Apps. So, the specifications were like changing all the time, which happens all the time, for any software projects. And I think, yeah, because the Static Web Apps service wasn't generally available, so there were no need yet for such a CLI tool or whatever. So, and yeah, because I went ahead and built that tool for myself, the team saw it and they liked it, and I can't explain why, but they liked the tool and they decided to adopt it. So I think if there were no CLI at that point, of course, the team would have to build such a similar tool, because I think that was something obvious for Damien to have a companion CLI for any service. Like, we have this for Cosmos DB, we have this for Azure itself, we have it for
storage.
Yeah, we have different CLI. So obviously, for static web apps, there was a need for such a tool.
So John, one of the things I like about AG Grid, which is a data grid component for the kind of complex grid scenarios that we encounter all the time in enterprise apps, one of the things I really like about it is that it works for a variety of frameworks, Angular, React, Vue, or just vanilla JS. Does that ring a bell for you?
Oh, it really does. There's all these different companies that I work with where they have no choice but to use a lot of these different tools because they have different teams working on them. So being able to port their code or share that code and that technical investment they have is really important to them.
Yeah, well, it's important to us. Ideally, we're a consulting company, and you know, we never know what our client's going to want to use, Angular, React, or Vue, but they're all going to need a grid, and it's great to be able to reach for the one grid that works everywhere, AG Grid.
You know, at any size company, too, because you could have these teams that maybe they only use one framework, but eventually they're going to switch to another one and be able to take that investment again and use it, reuse it, is really nice.
So if a multi-framework data grid makes sense to you, please go check out AG Grid at ag-grid.com.
A lot of products that get built and shipped, and companies have different philosophies on this. A lot of times we, as developers, we create the thing and we ship the thing. But stuff like tests or documentation or the tools around it, like having a VS Code extension that helps use the product or having a CLI tool or all these things kind of become, yes, they're important, but we got to get the product out first. And then those tools kind of develop as the ecosystem around it, which is where I think you're right. Like, eventually maybe something like this would have been created, but I think it's impressive that you took your idea from ideation all the way through implementation, and now you're working with the team on this out there. I mean, is that part of your job? Is that, I mean, what is your job?
What do you do?
What do you do for a living, man?
I actually wrote a blog post about it recently. No, just kidding. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I work on the developer advocacy team at Microsoft. I think we're on the same team, John.
We are. But tell people, like, is this something that developer advocates should do, can do? Are you?
That's a great question, because so my personal answer is that's something that developer advocates should do, but also it should be, you know, baked by the company, you know. And we are lucky enough on our team to have a chance actually to. If you want, we can do this kind of stuff. We can contribute code to our services and even to external projects, to be honest. I mean, I contributed to Node, to Angular. Other folks contribute to the REST ecosystem, to Java. You know, that's something that many of us do. And doing it for our own services, it's even, you know, greater, I would say, because you will have lots of impact, an impact of millions of developers. So I was lucky enough to, you know, be working on this prototype and then eventually helping and contributing to that, to the same tool as part of my job. All it took is just like discussing this with my manager and saying, okay, the team, the static web apps team decided to adopt the tool. He was super excited. So I had to, you know, take all the time it needed to make that project, you know, all stable, stabilized, you know, implement new features, fix tons of bugs, re-implemented some of the core features, all the stuff. Doing this, you know, part of my developer advocacy role, you know, and beside, you know, doing all the other aspects of my role as well. So, but like, officially speaking, like technically speaking, this is not my job. Like, I'm not on the engineering team. I wasn't hired as an engineer working full-time on Azure. But at least, I mean, I have a chance and the opportunity to contribute code to these services. And I consider this actually to be part of my job, even if if it's not on the job description. And I hope it, you know, I hope it's part of any developer advocacy role out there.
Well, I think that's one of the key things about being in maybe developer relations as a whole. You know, I work for our content team, and yeah, I still try to find as many ways as I can to be writing not just code, but real world code every day. And so I think it's something that really helps. When you're trying to help influence, lead, or teach people about technology, you kind of have to be about the business of writing code, of building tools in order to be able to speak in a relevant way.
Totally, yeah, definitely. Most of developer advocates I know have a technical background, like they were developers before. So they shipped code, I broke production. I deleted
the right of passage
SQL Server database once in my lifetime.
It is. I think everybody has to go through those things, right? You have to, if you haven't deleted a database in production, you know, on a Friday at 5 p.m., then you haven't lived.
Were you reading my journal? I did that at a financial company one time.
Oh, my, really?
I've done this on a railways company here in France. But I mean, yeah, this particular role is kind of like different. I mean, challenging because, you know, you're at the center of the community, like between the community and your engineering team. So you have to be technical somehow because you need to speak the same language of the two communities. Your community, obviously, and the product teams. And yeah, being technical yourself would also give you the opportunity to do things like this, you know, write tools, not necessarily to be adopted by the team, by the engineering team or product teams, but at least to serve some developers, you know. And if this CLI wasn't, or yeah, if it didn't get adopted by the team, I would be still happy because I know it would be used by folks outside of Microsoft. I mean, the developers who are using Static Web Apps. At least I would use it myself. I would be pretty happy about it. That's most of the story behind this tool.
Well, Asim, I really want to thank you for coming on today and sharing the story with us, because this was, while this is all about technology that you've written, and you're a deeply technical fellow and super humble as well, I've known you for a while now. But one of the things I really liked about this episode is that it's not just about the technology. It's about taking ideas that we all have and finding out, how do we communicate with the people around us, the community of users who are now using your product that you fathered, right? Into being, and also working with the engineers who you needed to figure out, okay, my thing is a square shape and they have kind of a round hole over here. How do I take that and fit it into their ecosystem so that they can accept it? And also just making sure, you know, what does that handoff look like? What are you responsible for? What are they? There's a lot of coordination and collaboration involved in here, which we haven't hit on too much, but I don't want to let our listeners think that, yeah, just create some code and throw it over the wall and, you know, any big company will just take it and run. There was a lot of human element behind this with you, Asim, and I appreciated that.
Thank you. In terms of collaboration with the team, like right now, because, I mean, initially, being the person who built that tool, I was in charge of, you know, adding any feature I wanted. I was basically doing my own specifications, but since the team officially adopted the tool, I had to, I would say, in quote, abide by the rules, because I wasn't in charge of the specifications anymore.
Right.
Because the team has its own priorities and roadmap, so the CLI from now on needs to be aligned with these priorities and roadmap. One example to this is, by the way, the CLI is not the only tool we have for Static Web Apps. We also have the VS Code extension. So we have a team working on the VS Code extension experience for the for SWA. Now, the CLI needs to also support VS Code extension, because the VS Code extension is using the CLI under the hood, at least in some point, you know. For instance, if you want to spin up your local dev environment for setting web apps, this is going to be using the CLI under the hood. So now the CLI needs to support that in terms of, you know, adding new flags. for instance, here is a fun fact. So initially, when the project was born, I was using like three servers. And I think, Craig, you remember that. So
I do.
Three servers with three different ports and basically three different processes running at the same time. That wasn't an option for the VS Code team. Like, they wanted only one server with one point so they can easily kill the CLI if there's anything wrong. And initially I went with three servers because that was easy for me to build, because I was, you know, I was just doing a prototype for myself. And now, yeah, we had, like, I had to re-implement the core of the CLI to remove, first of all, the Azure Functions project for the auth emulation. Now, the auth emulation is written in pure Node.js because we don't have a dependency on core tools. So that's got removed. And then remove all the three servers, like merge all the three servers in one simple server with one port, like one exposed port. So this is, you know, the thing that will change is that now you're responsible of the tool, but there is an official roadmap. There are official specifications that you need to follow. So it's not just, okay, the team adopted the tool, now I'm free. No, not exactly. Now you have more work to do, and it's fun work. I mean, it's like you spend, you know, 80% of your time building that prototype, and the remaining percents are now the fun part begins. The tool is going being publicly announced and officially supported. So it needs to support the official roadmap with all the requirements from other teams and from, you know, different people.
Speaking of having fun on a project, you must have had fun building this, and I can tell. Well, every time we talk about it, you're deeply passionate.
I'm still
working on it. Yeah. Yeah. Did you add any fun Easter eggs into the CLI? Are there any dancing cats or anything like that? I know you like cats, so can I make cats dance on my screen?
No, I haven't. But actually, I was thinking that would be my last task on the project before I hand it over to the team. For once, but I don't know, not yet. No Easter egg.
You're gonna have to check your pull requests. Everybody's gonna be sending in PRs to add Easter eggs.
Yeah, we dropped the GitHub link into the show notes, everybody. So if you can get dancing cats into the CLI, I think Wasim may make that his final merge. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if I like it, I'll merge it.
Thank you, Wasim, for coming on the show. We like to end our show with a final thought for our listeners out there. And today I'm going to ask Craig, what is your final thought for our listeners, the man of many cats?
Kind of in the spirit of what we've been talking about in this whole show, is if you see a need, if you see something that can make your life easier, make someone else's life easier, if you're capable and you have the time and the resources and you won't get in trouble with work, or you have the extra time, is try to build that tool. Try to create that thing that can be valuable to yourself or others, and even if it doesn't get used. So Wasim was talking about this, like, even if the product team didn't pick this up, he still got that experience of building it and sharpening his technical abilities. He got the experience of trying to work with the product team. And ultimately, he got the experience of being able to have a more delightful developer experience because this CLI did some things that made his life easier. And so it's kind of all upside. As long as you have the time and the resources for it, you know, to build these things and help make your life a little bit easier and maybe learn something in the process.
That's a good point, Craig. And my final thought for the audience today, it's
an expression, I'm sure, I know I didn't coin this, and I don't know where I heard it from, but I'm sure you all have as well. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. Or it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I think this really goes into line with open source and being in the technology industry. There's a lot of folks out there who are technically very adept. They're super sharp. They can build great things. And building a CLI, in this case, that was super powerful and needed is awesome. But it's also, I want to call out that I was there on the ground watching as Wasim brought this into the product. And it's how he did it. The way he did it was very collaboratively, very welcoming, took a lot of feedback. There were many points where I think a lot of people could have been like, no, this is my baby. I'm not changing this thing. Are you kidding me? I want 3 servers. I'm going to add 10 more. You know, the more servers, the better. But, you know, it's really important the way people do things. And I think if you really want to go far in any place in life, I've always really relied on that saying. It's not necessarily, okay, I could be right, or I could work with these people and move further together. So I think it's just a good thing to think about and keep in mind in any industry that you happen to be in. Doesn't matter if it's tech or not. Wasim, what is your final thought for our audience?
You know, I would quote this, you know, this quote that says, don't ask forgiveness, don't ask for permission, ask forgiveness. I always messed up. So what I'm trying to say here is, if you think that something is needed, it's something that would help you accomplish your job or anything in your life, just do it. Don't ask if you can do it. Don't even wonder if you have the ability or the skills to do it. There's, as Greg mentioned, there are tons of resources online that you could use to learn and to build stuff. And, you know, don't, you know, you have this goal in your mind. Just follow that goal. Don't see all the problems, you know, in between during the journey. So yeah, just do it. Build the thing that you think gonna help you succeed or, you know, do your job better, quickly, efficiently. Just do it. And if you can do it in the open, that would be awesome. Otherwise, it's not a big deal. But yeah, just do it. Learn it and do it and share it if you can.
I like that, and I appreciate it. And, you know, recently I will say, what's that expression on the internet? Today I learned, TIL. Recently, wasn't today, I learned that Grace Hopper was the person who is credited with originally saying that quote.
That's why I can't find it.
Yeah, many, many developers out there, technologists, maybe I'm the only one who didn't know, but if maybe you've been saying that expression all along out there, but I always thought that was quite fascinating. That was a Grace Hopper thing. And I thought I knew a lot and I don't. So today I learned. I appreciate all your time on this today, Wasim, and all the effort you put into the CLI. And thanks for joining us here from France. And for all of you out there, thank you for listening to yet another week of our podcast. And I want to thank our special sponsors who are able to keep us on the air and bring us to you every Thursday morning. You'll hear from us next week.